Hello and welcome to Privacy in Practice, brought to you by the Data Privacy Group. The new show talking about data privacy issues that you will face in your business, and for us to share some stories about how we help our customers in the hope that it will help you. My name is Sean Wright and I am joined by my colleagues and fellow co-hosts, Ian and Peter Borner. They are the founders of the Data Privacy Group. Each time we get together, we're going to have a main topic of discussion and two segments of the show, which will be Name and Shame and Word on the Street. So let's get straight into it. We are talking about, is there a skills gap? Are we seeing a shortage of skilled, qualified and experienced data privacy practitioners that can help customers and companies navigate their way through this new data privacy era that we are living in? So, Peter, are we actually seeing a shortage of data privacy professionals?
Okay, so let's just put it in perspective. May the 24th, 2018, GDPR became the first new data privacy law for a long time in the world. Since then, over 500,000 people have been registered as the data privacy officer across all of the supervisory authorities in Europe. That's a huge number. I can't believe that all of those people were existing data privacy professionals.
Difficult to comprehend, really, all those people.
Well, there's two things you have to ask yourself is did each firm do a proper determination to see whether they were required to have a data privacy law, or if they elected to have a data privacy officer, or if they elected to have one anyway? There's nothing wrong with that. But there is the question as to whether these DPOs are required under the regulation. But secondly, it's great to see that firms are taking data privacy seriously. The GDPR is often talked about as being the gold standard for data privacy, and as the new laws come out, I mean, take a look at LGPD in Brazil. It's not finalised yet, but it's pretty much a copy of the GDPR. Take a look at CCPA in California. A number of differences, but they're all trying to do the same thing, and I applaud governments for that. It would be great to see some commonality, some much closer commonality, but as it is, lots of countries, lots of jurisdictions are bringing out data privacy laws, and there is clearly a shortage of skilled professional staff. Colleges and universities are starting to put courses together to train people from to get into data privacy. You got to applaud that.
For the immediate need.
Yeah, but really it's about experience.
Yeah.
It's about having experience of business, of risk.
Operations.
Compliance. And bringing that all together to underpin your privacy stance in your firm, and that takes experience.
And you can see the shortage, sort of clear shortage, just by looking at the jobs advertised on LinkedIn. I've been tracking data privacy jobs on LinkedIn since about October. Back then in the UK, there was about 15,000 data privacy jobs, which in itself is a huge amount. However, forward to today, I think we're about 45,000, close on 45,000 jobs in the UK, well over 100,000 data privacy jobs advertised in the States, and almost 250,000 jobs advertised worldwide. So I think...
You're qualified and you've got the experience, there's going to be plenty of work out there for you. So it's a good industry or good career path choice, but still it's going to take a while for these people to get trained and get ready. So what a company's going to do?
So just to put some perspective in those numbers, they are privacy related jobs. So they will be everything from data privacy practitioners, DPOs, right the way through to privacy counsel. It covers the whole thing. But you're absolutely right. It's a great opportunity for people to get into a new industry. And if you compare that with some of the big applications, your SAPs, ServiceNow, those kind of applications, the same thing happened. The demand for qualified people, just burgeoned, and it's what's happening now with data privacy. Mm-hmm. Lots of people got trained up, but it took a long time for people to be trained up and be experienced and good at what they do. So what happens in that intervening time is demand is difficult to fulfil. So the people that are experienced can charge more and more money for that, and it increases the price of that supply chain.
And Ian, didn't one of your clients recently? How many people have they trained up that are then left?
Yes, we've seen it with quite a few of our clients. They've come to us with an issue that they had either brought somebody in, had to train them up on business processes, or train somebody up from internally around sort of data privacy practitioner.
So does that mean that the fact that it's people can charge a premium, is that encouraging people to leave? It's kind of a good thing, it's a good career move to get into, but also bad that companies are forced with maybe having to train.
Exactly that, Sean. That we've seen people, as I said, they've trained people up, or they've brought people in, and that's obviously a cost to the business. But those individuals are seeing these hundreds of thousands of privacy roles advertised on LinkedIn and are getting trained and then moving elsewhere. They're either going to find a better paid job somewhere else, or as a lot of people have done, started to set up their own privacy.
Yeah, and you can't really blame people.
One man operations. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And of course, this is nothing new. As I mentioned earlier about SAP and other products, ServiceNow, for example, that level of churn happens naturally because of the supply and demand issue.
Exactly.
It will only get solved by bringing in people from the bottom end and training them up, but that necessarily takes time. And when you're talking about compliance, when you're talking about regulatory issues and so on,
about the ICO, we'll fine you a sizable amount of money if you get it wrong.
Yeah, and the ICO is just the UK.
Yeah,
Canil in France and so on. There's 28 different supervisory authorities for the GDPR, plus then you get into other jurisdictions. Everyone's got a supervisory authority, and you've got to be able to defend your position with them. You've got to bring people in, but how long does it take to get them trained, and how certain can you be? And what happens is that firms, while they're doing this training, what they're doing is they're leaning on either internal counsel if they're big enough, or we've even seen situations where non-specialist law firms are jumping on the bandwagon of GDPR and offering advice, and they're charging lots of money for it, and they're just seeing it as an opportunity, but they're learning on the job as well. So the big data privacy practices, their rates are going up as well, because it's just a slight supply and demand issue.
Yeah, and just thought just came to me, we talk about, and we hear about companies trying to implement a privacy culture throughout the company from top to bottom, but that should also include the people you're training up.
Oh, of course.
Looking after them.
Of course, and firms that put their customers, their clients, at the centre of their business and are transparently protecting that customer's data are firms that are winners in this game. And who wants to do business with a firm who is constantly breaching?
The word for me is trust. Everyone across the globe is way more savvy with how they want their data handled, how they expect their data to be handled. And if you find a company that you trust, they're going to win.
They're asking the question, aren't they? What are you doing with my data?
Exactly.
Well, go back to the Cambridge Analytica issue. I mean, Cambridge Analytica were a big firm, okay, and making a decent profit. And where are they now?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
nobody will go near Cambridge Analytica because of the data privacy issue, and it was really a misuse of personal data.
Yeah, and the companies that they helped that got drawn into that, they're all over the news now as well.
Absolutely.
The elections, Facebook, in the elections in the US as well. It's still something that rears its ugly head.
Yeah, and it's all about trust. You're absolutely right, Ian. Yeah.
Okay, so we have, you know, a long-term kind of solution, which is embed culture, look after the people that you're training, let's promote this as a career opportunity and train people up. But the laws aren't slowing down. So what are companies supposed to do in the meantime? Well, whilst you're waiting for that talent and that, it's one thing to have the knowledge, but the experience is key to go along with that, isn't it? So what do companies do in the meantime?
There are two schools of thought. Yes, bring people in internally, train them up. Get your either your internal counsel or outside counsel in to help with that, getting your policies and procedures in place, and then the culture will follow. And that's a very, very long game, incredibly expensive. I think one other option, and one very, very good option, is to outsource a privacy office. Can you find a company that you can bring in to help you manage those manage your policies, manage your procedures, and take that compliance worry off your hands?
Yeah,
I think that that we have to be careful about self-promotion here, because obviously that's what we're doing.
Not at all, it's our podcast.
So, yeah, no, I get that. I get that. But you know, you're right. You either do it internally or you do it externally. And my advice would be, if you're going to do it externally, make sure you choose wisely. Make sure you do your diligence.
Absolutely.
You know, find a firm that's got experience, that can fast track you and so on. Mm-hmm. Because, as we said earlier, there are a lot of very small one-man bands, small companies that, you know, actually don't have the depth of experience. Mm-hmm. And it's not just experience in data privacy law. Mm-hmm. It's experience in multiple data privacy laws, and it's experience in, you know, business and risk and M&A and all the other things that form part of the landscape of skills and experience that you need as a company. There are some great firms out there that do it. We like to count ourselves in as one of those firms.
Absolutely.
But that's not be self-promoting.
You know, that is the principle with outsourcing. You know, it can be a great option for companies depending on your setup and your size, but do you do diligence? Do your checking? That goes with any service that you're going to outsource.
Yep.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, we could talk about that for quite a while, but I'm conscious of time. We need to keep moving. So let's move on to the next segment, name and shame. Who's on the naughty step in the privacy world this week? And Peter, I believe you've got an example that happened just today, have you not?
Well, it was actually a couple of days ago. But first of all, I will say that while we've called this slot name and shame, this particular incident I'm not prepared to name. And for the simple reason that it's a minor issue, but it shows you, it's a good example of what you can do wrong very easily.
Not too true.
And the issue is that a couple of days ago, the broadband provider that supplies the circuits into this office emailed me and about 400 other people with a marketing message, and the employee in their marketing department put 400 email addresses in the two box, so everyone got shared names and email addresses and so on. Now, of course, it's minor, and we're not particularly worried about it, but what happened as a consequence of that was there were hundreds of emails going around because everyone decides to reply all and say, is this not a GDPR issue?
It's like you've just been put into a new WhatsApp group.
Exactly. So that's just an example of a simple mistake that one of your employees can make that breaches data. Now, if it had been more than just a marketing message, it had been real data being pushed out, then that could have been a much more serious issue. So that's a firm that really is not done their education and training of their employees properly. I just want to say that there is an additional edge to this particular one, because three or four months ago I wrote to that company and I did a subject access request and didn't get the information that I expected to get. They were quite aggressive to me, and so I said, fine, here's a deletion request, a stop processing request, and everything else I could think of to, you know, to remove all of my data from their system, other than the information that they are required to hold to service the contract that we have between us. So why did I get a marketing message?
Exactly.
Why because they wrote back to me and said, your data has been deleted. Well, they clearly hadn't been deleted. They just wrote back to me. Now, that to me is a much more serious breach, and it shows that they don't take data privacy particularly seriously.
And that's just how, that's a great example of how easy it is to get caught out.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're not taking it seriously, you don't know. There could be 100 data privacy professionals within that group, and you didn't know it. And that's how easy it could be to get caught out and get reported.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because my email address is at thedataprivacygroup.com. So you would think that there was a big indicator that I know just a little bit about data privacy.
Okay, well, no name internet provider company. Get yourself sorted, otherwise you could be in some serious trouble. And that goes for everybody else. If you're not taking it seriously, it is time to, because there are fines on the way if you're not. Moving on again to the next segment, word on the street. What's the news on the street, Ian? What have you heard? What rumours are going around?
Okay. So first of all, I'll say this is completely unsubstantiated, but came up in conversation with one of our clients last week. We're actually, for this client, running a cookie compliance project, and they had heard on the grapevine that the ICO had that had engaged one of the big four, EY, we think. But again, like I say, it can't be substantiated. I can't find anything online to take a look at UK-based companies' external-facing web properties, so websites, and to look at whether they are compliant with regards to their cookie strategy and also their external-facing privacy notices.
Wow, is that allowed to happen?
Absolutely, and from the ICO perspective, that could be seen as that's low hanging fruit, and it's a lesson to any company out there to make sure that anything that they have that is external facing is compliant.
I suppose these are the basics.
Exactly. If you don't stick your head above the parapet and give the ICO a reason to come digging, then you're in a much better, more defensible position.
So, as a company, if I'm worried about my, whether my cookies are being placed on machines compliantly or not, how do I do that? The way that we do it is we're OneTrust experts, so we use the OneTrust tool for it. But if you don't use OneTrust, then there's a tool called CookieBot. Mm-hmm. And if you go to cookiebot.com, you can run a scan of your website, and it will tell you whether your website is compliant for cookie handling. If it's that easy, just think how easy it is for the ICO, EY, whoever it is, to run thousands of scans. They haven't got to pay lots of highly experienced people. They can do this with admin staff. They get the report, and if you're not compliant, it can be automated in terms of sending you an enforcement notice. And if they run it again 3 or 4 weeks later and you're still not compliant, you're going to get a fine. That's, of course, if the rumour's true.
Oh, no, exactly. But the thing is, it's easily fixable.
And when we're approaching companies as prospective clients, what's the first thing we do? We look at whether they've got a good external facing privacy stance. So we take a look at their privacy notice. We take a look at the way they handle consent on any of the forms on their website, and we take a scan over their website to see if their cookies are compliant, because that's a good indication to us if they need our help or not.
Yep,
absolutely. Okay, well, get the basics right, because if the rumours are true,
maybe we've got a minute. I've got one other rumour.
Go on,
which I heard the other day.
Come on, yeah,
Completely unsubstantiated.
Enunciated.
If I could say it properly, I'd be okay. I heard a rumour that that the ICO is comparing their list of companies that have paid the data processing fee with the list of companies registered on Companies House. And if you're not on both lists, then they're looking to write to you and find out why you haven't paid the data processing fee. It's not expensive, £30-40 for a small company, 100 or so pounds for a larger company. But if you haven't done it, I would suggest that you do it.
So the ICO either had a very extravagant Christmas party, or they're responding to all the "are they enforcing the law" kind of comments that have been going around. So we'll leave that to you to decide which it is. But do the basics, get it right, and save yourself some fines from the ICO. Well, chaps, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today, so we're going to have to wrap things up. But thank you for joining me, and thank you to the listeners for joining us on our very first show. If you liked what you heard, please tune in again next time, probably in about a couple of weeks' time, where we will be posing the question, where does cybersecurity end and privacy begin? And in between now and then, if you'd like to keep up with all the latest data privacy news and articles, then please feel free to go to our website, thedataprivacygroup.com. We're also very heavy users on LinkedIn, so you can always touch base with us on there. But once again, thank you very much, and we look forward to you joining us next time. This has been Privacy in Practice, brought to you by the Data Privacy Group.